You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. This episode comes from the earlier version of the podcast, known as the ETT Rap Show. Enjoy!
Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. We really appreciate you guys tuning in week to week. If you have an extra second, please head to iTunes and give us a rating or review. Also, we would really appreciate you guys sharing these episodes with anyone you think could benefit from the health and fitness news we put out on a week-to-week basis. This week, we got a throwback episode. We're going back into the ETT Rap Show vault to pull out an interview I did with health and fitness professional who also happens to be a good friend of mine, Dr. L.A. Jennings. She is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to not only health and fitness, but also specifically the history of fighting sports and women in fighting sports. I think you guys are really going to enjoy the conversation between LA and I. So without further ado, please enjoy this throwback episode of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Welcome back to the ETT Rap Show. I'm your host, Nick Birch, and sitting with me now full-time is yes. Shannon Birch.
I mean the full-time position.
Yes, she is the full-time co-host. Obviously, Tyler, I had to give him the boot. You know, he was not producing, so I had to fire him. No, Tyler so called me this week, and we talked, and he has a lot of other things he wants to pursue, even in podcasting in general, too, on his own podcast, and other pursuits that he's interested in, but specifically, he wanted to get back to the ETT training, because not only were we able to podcast, but we weren't able to train.
Yeah, you guys have been missing your bro dates for quite a while now.
Right, so we're putting the training, which is, I prefer, we're putting the training over priority over recording podcasts, so Shannon is now the full-time co-host of the ETT Rap
By
Show.
By default.
No. No. Of course not. Yeah. You know, she gets a little bump in pay now since she's full-time. From zero to less than zero.
Or zero.
Yeah. Zero to zero. And we won't have to worry about doing any Skype dates or anything like that with Tyler. And we'll be actually focusing on just training when I go over to train with Tyler, which I'm happy
that'll
about.
That'll be a nice thing for you guys, though, I think. Less responsibility towards, you know, creating any kind of content is a really big responsibility. And you'll be able to focus on just, you know, getting him to where he wants to be physically.
Right. That's obviously the biggest priority. So I'm glad we kind of came to that decision. And now I actually get to, you know, regularly see him more and get to train, which is the reason why we are kind of, I mean, not only are we friends, but I'm his personal trainer. So now I get to train him, which is ideal. In addition to other ETT training news, we had a great week of training sessions with the clients this week. We got in another good, we have a father-son team that trains together. They actually got to train inside. They have a nice little area where we can train inside their house, so they got to avoid the humid afternoon temps, lucky them. And we also had another client who's been with me pretty much since the beginning. But probably the last, man, I would say 6 weeks, maybe four or five weeks, she's been kind of on and off because she got married around the same time we got married.
Yeah.
And so just the dates was with all of the responsibility that goes in with getting married for both sides, ours and hers, we couldn't link up, you know. So we hadn't had a training session in almost a month and a half, it seems like.
How was that getting back to it?
It was good. Like, she is very dedicated. She's very technically good, especially striking wise.
She's great.
She's very good. She was already fit when she came to me anyways. So she enjoys the striking aspect and the cardio aspect and the workouts. So hopefully she'll be able to, I know her schedule is tough with her job. Her job is kind of similar to your job. So the hours aren't exactly, you know, 9 to 5. There's a lot of
weird hours.
Yeah, there is. You leave when the job's done, not necessarily at the you know, quitting time. There's no set quitting time. So training during the week for her is tough. So hopefully we might make her. She might be moving to weekend workouts, which would be good. you know, Saturday morning workouts or something like that. So besides that, my own personal training, I got to jiu-jitsu twice this week, kind of finally got back into it, you know, since our wedding and things. I've been in a honeymoon. I hadn't got a chance to get back yet, so I got back and went two nights in a row and kind of got beat up, to say the least.
Yeah, you were looking a little rough by day three. Like, the day after the 2 days in a row, you were looking a little peaked and had injuries previously from the race last weekend, and just, you look beat up.
Yeah, it was. I could tell. Wednesday and Thursday at work, I was run down. So I was like, man. I was like, but that's my next goal is to try to compete in jiu-jitsu. So I got to train when I can. So I'll take it, even if I'm beat up. I'll take when I can get it. And in addition to my training, you got a training session in this week. What kind of exercise did you get to this week?
Well, you trained me this weekend, which was nice. We don't always get an opportunity for you to train me, but we did some striking yesterday, and that was a really good workout. Did like mostly leg strikes and then also some arm interval training. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. Then I went for a good old run this morning, but I also tried aerial yoga for the first time ever.
Oh yeah, how did that go?
That was awesome. That was really cool. I actually kind of slipped into a class I wasn't supposed to be in. Apparently you have to take a workshop before you even go to these classes. So I'm actually taking the workshop this coming week, and I've already taken one class. But the one class, it's pretty awesome because part of it feels like you're doing yoga, like, you know, hanging upside down, which is just something kind of awesome. You get much deeper stretch. Other parts of it feels like you're doing it in water because there's just this weightless feeling, and it's pretty amazing. So I would say it's kind of a mixture of beginners and advanced, but I'm excited to really get like a full range training in it this week at the workshop. But that was my biggest like new thing.
Yeah, that's it. It's amazing how many different types of fitness training there is available to people nowadays.
I know.
I mean the whole spectrum, like you said, aerial yoga to the striking that we incorporate, jiu-jitsu, and then spinning. Mm-hmm. Or
I mean, just this week I did aerial yoga, I did spinning, I did running, I did HIIT workouts, and then I did striking.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah,
so I mean,
you can experience so much, and there's so much stuff available to everybody to say it's great. And another that kind of leads us into a topic we wanted to kind of touch on. It is like not only the different variety that's in the health and fitness industry, but influential people in the health and fitness industry. I know you have a couple people you follow on social media that kind of are within that influential people group.
Yeah.
I know I have a couple that I've spoke about previously. Either they have podcasts or they've been on podcasts. I know Rob Wolf, I mentioned him last week, Dr. Jason Fong, Vinny Tortorich, of course. I know I talk about him. He has the Celebrity Trainer podcast. And then even people like Joe Rogan, who has really either doctors or nutritionists on to really talk about fitness. Mm-hmm. Steve Maxwell is another guy that he's had on who's really interesting, an interesting fitness person who has a great, you know, either kettlebells or a lot of isometric exercises he explains. And then people we've already talked about on this podcast, Mark Sisson, Mark's Daily Apple, things like that. Who are some people that maybe a lot of people don't know about that you follow that are kind of in the fitness and health industry?
Yeah.
Or influential?
I mean, I think most of the people you just named, if not all of them, were men. And from the female perspective, I think there's been such a kind of overlooked area of fitness for women. You know, just recently are women really getting great role models to work with, and it's not all in like aerobics and dancing and all of these female dominated athletic type workouts. So one that I actually found via YouTube just like a suggested YouTube channel to check out, and I actually love her. She's a bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki Blackketter.
Okay.
And she's on Snapchat, she's on Instagram, and she's like this teeny little petite, like 20-something. I mean, she's really tiny, but that girl is freaking cut. And she does it in ways that, you know, she's very upfront, she's very honest. You see what she eats, you see the good, the bad. She's also really upfront with, you know, just her life in general, but she represents some fitness...
Excuse you, Jasmine.
She represents some fitness brands as well, so she's not just a great kind of role model to show women that you don't have to be afraid of weights, because I think so long, like even in my life, I was afraid of lifting weights because I'm a muscular female, and I was like, if I lift weights, I'm going to look like a man, but so many more women are coming out of that, whether it's CrossFit or, you know, like, as a bodybuilder, that are coming out and really proving that's not the case, and that it doesn't matter if you have big muscly legs, because that can be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So she's definitely one that I think she's funny and entertaining, but also one that I've been following for a while is Susanna or Suska Light.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she was one of the founders of Body Rock, the workouts, the HIIT workouts, Body Rock. And then she split from her husband, moved to LA, and she started her own brand. And I just love her. I think she's adorable. She's this little, I think she's from Slovakia or something.
Mm-hmm.
But she's incredibly positive. She's always trying new things. She has like a subscription workout service you can become a member of online. It's super reasonable, but she just spins positivity all the time, whether it's nutrition, whether it's workouts, whether it's just life in general. She's adorable. She's actually, I think, around my age, which kind of is always a nice thing to see someone your own age doing these things, but she's all about the HIIT workouts, different types of HIIT workouts. She posts really great Instagram, YouTube, and I've learned a lot from her over the years since I first started following her, and I think she was the personality that really like drew me into the HIIT workouts and made me realize that's something I could do and love.
Yeah, and I know I the names I mentioned before were all, like you said, were all men, but there's another one we've talked about on the podcast, Dr. Rhonda Patrick.
Yeah.
Who's also an influential woman, but I've known you've been following Susanna for a while, and I've done some of Susanna's workouts myself, and very good. Like I said, very, you know, they're the interval-based stuff, too, kind of the HIIT workout style, too, but she's always incorporating new things, and she... very influential. There's a person my example I'm going to give is a little kind of, he's a very popular guy, but people don't think he's popular, like, wouldn't see him, know him as a popular fitness, like an influential fitness person, but it's Kevin Hart, the actor, comedian. I know everybody knows him from the, you know, his comedy shows and everything like that, but if you follow him on Instagram, probably Twitter also, he constantly posts picture of him getting up and working out, always in the gym, and I believe he's organized I don't know if it's every city he tours to, he will organize a 5K for people to join him, and he said, hey, we're doing a 5K here at the park at this time, come, it's free, and then they just run together, like run with Kevin or something like that. I don't know if that's the name of the campaign, I'm kind of making it up as I go, but I've seen him post pictures about that, post Instagram videos, so he's really influential of having people kind of, you know, be physically fit. So, and somebody with that much reach, he can definitely influence people to, you know, get out and run or go to the gym, things like that. So he's very dedicated to fitness and motivating people to be fit.
Well, and it's funny because his latest movie also includes The Rock.
Yep.
And so, you know, you got to be in shape to be standing next to The Rock. So I'm sure that they they had many workouts together.
Mm-hmm. The Rock's another guy I think I've probably
mentioned before. I love him. I do follow him. Yeah. He's amazing.
He's always posting pictures of 4 a.m. and he's in the gym. And
bless you.
So, yeah, that's another one people wouldn't think about being an influential character for fitness and health. But he definitely, he takes it very seriously, and he takes a good approach, and he tries to incorporate it, get it to everybody who tries to market it. You know, being fit, physically fit's important. So I think that's another person who's physically, an influential person in fitness and health that maybe you might not think about. And that brings us to
one of our mutual friends
who we wanted to talk about, who's also
an inspiration, and I follow her on pretty much every social platform she's on.
She's very influential. She's a close friend of ours, but also is very, like I said, I don't want to repeat being influential, but she's a big name, kind of, especially in not only fitness and health, but, you know, really in women's kind of.
Yeah, she's influential, but she's really a thought leader too. Mm-hmm. You know, she's kind of embarked on an area of health and fitness that, again, for women is just not the norm, which is, you know, really looking deeply at women and fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we obviously we don't have to keep a secret. Our friend Ellie Jennings, who we've mentioned on the podcast before, I met her out in Denver. She owns a gym out there. And I was fortunate enough to set up an interview with her this week that we're going to feature on the podcast. So she kind of goes through all of her, we touch on some different subjects about what she's very qualified and very knowledgeable in both fitness and, like you said, women's fighting sports and everything like that. So we're going to go ahead and play that interview for you guys right now. And then when we come back, we'll kind of touch on some of the subjects LA and I brought up.
Cool.
I'm very excited to have my friend, who's also an MMA gym owner, a PhD, and a published author, L.A. Jennings, joining us on the podcast this week. What's up, L.A.?
How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing good. Thank you for doing this. This type of interview of people in the fitness and health industry is something I want to start incorporating more and more into the podcast, because I love getting different people's perspective on topics that are kind of related to fitness and health. And I know you're a perfect person to talk to, specifically since I mentioned already in the intro that you are a published author. Your book is She's a Knockout, A History of Women in Fighting Sports. Now, can you give me kind of like the basic kind of synopsis of what the book really, kind of what's contained inside the book?
Sure. So the book is a history of women competing in fighting sports. And one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book is that about 3 or 4 years ago, when people were first sort of seeing Ronda Rousey come to the forefront, there was a lot of discussion about how, this new thing that women were doing. Women were finally participating in MMA. Women were finally able to compete in boxing in the Olympics. And the way that many of the articles were framed is that these were firsts for women. But that's not what my research indicated. And it's not that these weren't important steps, but it was that there was actually a very long history of women who were competing in boxing and in wrestling back in the 1700s and even back far prior to that. And so what I noticed during my research is that, again, there was just this very storied history, but that a lot of it was ignored. And I think part of it was due to this structural insistence from things like the Boxing Commission that really wanted to preserve boxing in their imagination as this male-only sport. And what they would argue was that, oh, well, women have never done boxing, so that's why they shouldn't start doing boxing. That's why we don't want to give them licenses in the 1970s. So that's why we don't want them to participate in boxing in the Olympics. But again, in 1720, there was a woman in England named Elizabeth Stokes, who was just this incredible boxer. And there's, firsthand sources of her calling people out in magazines, in the newspaper, accounts of her bouts with various women around London and around the country. And so it really was a rich history. And so it was a really fun experiment for me as an academic and also as a former fighter and a coach to pour through this and then be able to tell their stories in the book.
Was it easy to find the information? Because I imagine yourself, you said research. I mean, something, a subject like this, was it readily available to you, or did you have to do a lot of digging?
A lot of digging. For anyone who has ever spent time in an academic setting doing research, I was pouring not through journals, but through these very large catalogs of historic newspapers where I would literally have to search one word, like boxing, in these Boolean searches, and then read, you know, thousands and thousands of articles looking for material. It wasn't as easy as I could just say, you know, oh, female boxers, there are a couple that will, you know, show up in some basic text, but a lot of them were women whose names that I found literally just from searching through these thousands and thousands of newspaper records. And I specifically focused on the U.S. and on England, or at least on English written publications, because at a certain point you have to narrow down your focus. So it was a lot of deep digging.
I imagine. Like I said, subjects so kind of narrow as that, female mm-hmm. or fighting sports in general, I've done my fair bit of research before with science and things, my science background, but obviously my subjects were a little bit broader than that. What were a couple names? I know, I think people, probably a few common names people know specifically for women's boxing or women's fighting sports in general. We've already talked about Ronda Rousey, but, and people might know, I believe, Muhammad Ali's daughter. I don't know if, a name I've heard a lot is Chrissy Martin. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, Chrissy Martin was really interesting, too. So she was one of the first female boxers who was really brought into the forefront. Don King promoted a fight that she was in. She was one of the first women to be on one of those big pay-per-view matches, maybe it was HBO. And then Sports Illustrated also did this kind of creepy story about her, which it was like, she had an abusive ex-husband who sort of like took over the interview. It was a very strange thing, but she was a great boxer. Leila Ali, of course, you know, she had her father's name behind her. She was a good fighter. There have been a lot of claims, though, that she never really took any terribly intense opponents. Her fights weren't necessarily that rigorous simply because, you know, when you can choose your fights. What might be interesting, though, is that in the 1970s, there was a group of women who brought a lawsuit against the U.S. Boxing Commission because they wanted to get their cards to fight professionally. And the U.S. Boxing Commission said nope. They actually said, I think the quote was something like, you know, boxing is the last bastion of a male sphere in the U.S. and we want to preserve it. We're tired of women taking over everything, which is, of course, hilarious. So there was this amazing group of women, Tiger Tremiar, and several other women who fought for that right. And when they finally got, their licenses, there's pictures of them down, in the state of New York getting a license to be able to box professionally. And that was in 1973.
Wow. Well, that is another name that people probably know who actually, I think, kind of transitioned from boxing to MMA is Holly Holm. I know she was a very established boxer before she came to the UFC. And then a couple other names that I believe you had in your book, She's a Knockout, is Chris Cyborg Justino. Is that her last name?
Yes.
Or she just goes by Cyborg. A lot of people probably just know her by Cyborg.
Yes. She's one of my favorite fighters. I tend to like fighters based on their style. And not necessarily because of who they are as a person, because that doesn't really matter to me in an athlete. I just want to know that they're a good fighter. But she's one of the few people that I just find her utterly charming. If you ever watch her videos that she does or her posts on Instagram, she's just so, she just seems very sweet. She's really funny. She's actually a great dancer. There's these hilarious videos of her teaching Zumba and things like that. But, she's amazing, and she got a really bad rap. Now, you know, of course, when you use a performance-enhancing drug, whatever that drug may be, you have to face the consequences. But even before she tested positive and far after, I think she's routinely punished for her looks. If you Google her name, and you know how Google will
autocorrect,
I guess the phrasing that would
right.
that are most commonly associated with that name. Mm-hmm. The most common phrase that question that comes up in Google is Chris Cyborg a man?
Yeah.
And I find that really gross for a number of reasons, obviously. But she's an amazing fighter, and she put this very cool post on Instagram yesterday that I was really moved by. It was actually something I had written about previously when I was writing for Fightland, which is she was arguing that, you know, in the UFC right now, they have two weight classes for women. They have straw weight and they have bantam weight. So that's 115 pounds and 135 pounds. And, you know, women, like men, have a variety of different weights. You know, they don't all come in 115 or 135 pound packages. And so, you know, Chris was arguing that the UFC needs to add more weight classes. And I think that's really important too. So she's, like I said, one of my favorite fighters. And I don't know that she's ever going to be able to hit that bantam weight. And I don't know that she wants to try to hit it. She's interested in doing these 140 pound super fights against, you know, some of the other big name fighters out there. But I love her push to get more weight classes represented in the UFC.
Right. I think that's a great point. I think both for, obviously for women, since there's only two divisions right now, but for also for men, because you even look at something like light heavyweight to heavyweight is a 65 pound window, because it's
right.
like basically 206 to 265. I mean, that's almost 60 pounds. So, how is that fair? You know, for,
right.
I mean, just size, well, obviously, you know, skill wise, usually kind of the top guys right now, I think Miocic, who won this past weekend, was around 240, but still, you got a potential guy like Brock Lesnar, who's 260,
mm-hmm.
has to cut weight to mix 265. You got to fight somebody who's almost 30 pounds heavier than you. It seems somewhat unfair, and it's definitely, you can apply that to the women's division now with someone like Cyborg, who's in the UFC, just had her debut this past week, or I guess since this is going to be on Monday, it's going to be 2 weekends from now. Did you get to check any of the highlights from her debut?
I did, yeah. I think she looks great. I mean, I was a little worried about her cutting weight. You know, sometimes when people cut weight, you can tell they're a little, maybe a little sluggish, a little lethargic just from, you know, the calorie depletion, water depletion. But she looked great. I love Leslie Smith. Like, I think she's an amazing fighter. One of my favorite fights of all time was the first time that she and Caitlin Young fought in Invicta. I think that was about 3 years ago. I still consider it one of the best MMA fights of all time. And so I thought it was a great matchup, and I thought Chris looked fantastic.
Yeah, I heard she got a new boxing coach recently. Somebody, I forget the guy's name, but apparently I've heard them talk about it on different MMA podcasts that her boxing is not just the Blitzkrieg style. She's not just going to run forward and throw
yeah.
bombs. She's moving on angles and throwing, you know, combinations and moving out of the way. So now she's kind of becoming a more polished striker, even more so than she already was.
Yeah, you know, and that I like that really forward and aggressive style. That's actually how I used to fight when I competed, because you know, that's just my nature. But I think you're right. Like, the more that you can, add in those angles and protect yourself, it's not only going to make her a better fighter and a smarter fighter, but it's probably also going to help her as she, you know, begins to get older. I mean, you know, she's going to take less strikes that way, and she'll be able to really pick her shots. So it's a good move sometimes to switch coaches.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. I heard some rumblings about her next potential opponent. Jermaine Desrumaux, I believe, is woman who just had her her UFC debut pretty recently. She's comes from Muay Thai, and
cool.
I just saw that last night. So hopefully, maybe that'll be the next fight for her. So I'm interested to see how she does, and like you said, possibly a new weight division for the women in the UFC.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting. You know, one of the UFC, even way prior to when the UFC was bringing in women, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, one of the first sanctioned MMA fights between two women in this country was in California. And Lana Stefanik, who was the first American woman to get her black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mona Stefanik was in that fight, and she fights at 185. Mm. And, I mean, she is a beast. She's an amazing fighter, a fantastic grappler, obviously. And I think she told me, because I talked to her one time, that she walks at, like, 235. But, I mean, she's well over 6 feet tall. She's a very, very, you know, large woman in height and stature. And it's someone like that, you know, there's probably tons of women out there right now that are weighing more than this 135, or probably even more than 145, who would be amazing fighters to watch, but we don't get to see them because they have so little opportunity, not just in the UFC, but even in other venues to showcase their art.
Now, is that something that, I know, like I mentioned earlier, you own an MMA gym out in Colorado. That's how, obviously, I met you. Mm-hmm. I used to be one of your gym members there. And is there, since you wrote this book, and do you try to make it a mission to really kind of promote MMA for women? I mean, not just like, or just MMA training to women specifically, or do you kind of take a, like a broader scope that it's more, you know, you guys have no, it's for everybody, not just for men or just for women or certain segments or certain demographics.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more the latter. I mean, one of the things we've tried to do at our gym that I think we actually do really well is, we have made our space a pretty gender neutral space. So everybody can come in and they can train the same things, and they can learn the same technique. And whether you're a male or female, we're going to treat you the same. We're going to give you the same respect as a fighter or as just a member of our gym. And that was something that I felt like I struggled with a lot when I was first starting. I trained at a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym, and I was part of the first cohort to get our blue belts. We've been trained there for about 6 months, and my husband Mike and I both got our blue belts at the same time. And I was the only woman of that group. And after that, the classes at the gym were getting split, blue belt and white belt classes. But the blue belt class was all the blue belts except me, except the one woman. And my job became to teach white belts because my coach didn't like teaching white belts. Mm. And so as soon as my contract went up, Mike and I left because I wasn't being taken seriously. And I was trying to be competitive, to continue to compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, in submission wrestling, and then I was trying to get into MMA, but I did not have a coach who took me seriously. And that really, you know, put a bad taste in my mouth for a lot of the gyms that I encountered. Even before then, I was training at another gym and just wasn't getting the type of respect that I felt like I should get, not just from my teammates, but from my coaches too. And so we've made it our mission that if someone wants to train boxing or grappling or mixed martial arts and they walk in our gym, as long as, you know, they're respectful of everybody else, we are going to, you know, treat them all equally. So we don't care whether you're male or female. We don't care how old you are, how young you are either. We'll take you seriously. And I think that that's really important. I do offer some women's only training classes at my gym. But the reason why we started doing that is that, and Nick, I think you were there when this happened. We had a really hard time getting women in the door at our gym.
Yeah.
Because it's very intimidating when you come in and there's a room full of men and they all are very experienced and you're, you know, new and you're female. So we started a women's only class, and what it's really used for right now is sort of a launch. So I'll have women come in who are brand new, they learn some technique, and then the majority of them end up kind of matriculating into the other classes because, you know, they feel comfortable now and confident to train in the rest of the classes. And I always tell them, you can train in any class. There are women in every class. I teach all the striking classes at my gym. Mm-hmm. So I really can make sure that everything is comfortable for people. But yeah, I mean, I think as long as someone wants to train, the key is to treat them with dignity and to give them opportunities regardless of any qualifiers that maybe had previously made some gym owners less inclined to take people seriously.
Yeah, I think that's a major hang up with any MMA gym. I mean, it's getting a little bit more into kind of being popular amongst kind of casual fans or just, you know, everyday persons. But I think just walking, I mean, I know I even have a little bit of nervousness walking into my jiu-jitsu gym because there's so many, you know, acclaimed grapplers that work out there, that are trained there. So it's somewhat intimidating to me who's been, you know, doing martial arts for 10 years. Still, it's intimidating to me. I can imagine somebody who's never done it before just walking in. And then, and like you said, I was there for when we were trying to recruit, you know, a more evenly distributed demographic of male and female to kind of not intimidate any other females that walk in. But it's a thing that I like to kind of incorporate, it's one of the missions of ETT training is to, you know, introduce people to striking and give them a little bit of confidence. So maybe one day, hey, they want to go into one of the UFC gyms that are now a chain, a franchise, or some other type of boxing gym, they can do that without being nervous or, you know, or worried about being judged.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the reality that we need to live in now, is that the good thing about the sports becoming more popular, and actually you see this a lot with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's a lot of very high-level women who are competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and it's really great. I think, though, that, you know, one of the interesting things that Mike and I have noticed, though, is that sometimes when you have gyms that are still very much driven by machismo, that the women who are there tend to kind of take that on. It's a way to protect yourself. So if, you know, you're rolling with a guy and, you know, you say, hey, stop being such a girl, you can go harder, right? Well, the problem with that is, of course, you're saying that being a girl is a negative thing. So another big part of the environment we try to create at our gym is just trying to keep everything really positive and make sure that our language reflects that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just me. In fact, I usually very rarely correct people on what they say. Mike and some of the other guys end up doing it for me, which is kind of great because men are learning from other men about ways to, you know, to speak. We try to make sure that there's no, you know, sexist or homophobic language. But you know, at the same time, because I'm the head striking coach, so all of the striking classes are taught through me, and I coach all of our fighters, you know, through their striking and MMA events. So if someone walks in the door and they don't want to learn from a woman, then they're not going to stay at our gym. But we always say that the type of person who would just unilaterally say, I don't want to learn from a woman, probably doesn't fit into our gym anyway.
True.
So it's kind of nice. People sort of weed themselves out. And I think that, you know, I think that in the future, it will become much more prevalent for us to have these more egalitarian style facilities. So it's a good thing. It's much better than when I started 12 years ago.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going in the right direction. I mean, we still have work to get our, you know, room to grow, and everybody in the MMA community, I'm sure, are gyms specifically, but it's definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I will definitely suggest anyone who is visiting Denver to go to Train Fight Win. One of the main reasons, the only one reason I probably would have not moved back to Florida was because of the Mike in LA at Train Fight Win. You know, it's a great gym, and like LA described it, it's for everybody, not just experienced fighters. It's for new people who have never thrown a punch before or a kick. It's for, they have everything, and it's great. Like I said, I can't recommend it enough. So if you're even visiting Denver area, check them out for sure.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
Well, I think also want to recommend people make sure to get that book we talked about, LA's book, She's a Knockout, A History of Women in Fighting Sports. Check that out. I'm sure they can find it on Amazon or anywhere, you know, they sell books. And I just want to ask before I let you go, I had a great time. I hope you had a great time. Are you willing to come back maybe in the future and do it again?
Absolutely. You know, next time we should have Mike on too, and we can we could talk about couples training.
Oh, okay. Yes. Very interesting topic, because I know Shannon approached me recently and said she wants to do a little bit more striking training. So we're going to start try to incorporate that into our weekly routine, too. All right. Thank you so much, LA. I appreciate you joining us today.
Oh, it was so fun talking with you, Nick.
And we'll talk to you again in the future.
All right. Take care.
All right, guys. We're back here. Shannon and I, we just listened to the interview, too, as you guys listened to it. I thought it was great talking with LA. As I mentioned, Train Fight Win's a very special place to me. When I was in Denver, I was out there doing my graduate degree, and I was only there for 2 years, but I kind of moved out there just on my own. I just left Florida and was like, I want to do this. And luckily, I found Mike in LA and Train Fight Win, and they kind of become my extended family out there.
Well, you kind of like grew with them too, right? Because they were just starting out when you were there. And
yes, like, I was their first member. Yeah.
That's a special part of their history.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever told that story on the podcast, but I was there for their opening night, and I was their first member, and their very first location was just a little room and kind of a... I wouldn't say it's a rundown warehouse, but it was pretty much there.
That's how most of those gyms start.
And just concrete floors, and they threw up a couple drywall, you know, kind of little dividers and everything like that. And they had one pull up bar and kind of those
bare bones,
those jigsaw puzzle mats and things. Yes, bare bones is a great way to describe it. And I came in there, and as soon as I walked in, I saw Mike, I saw LA, I saw one of their other friends, Steve, and I was like, man, what did I get myself into? You know, because obviously I saw the ad on Craigslist and went to their website, and it sounded awesome, and I was like, oh, cool, because I was looking for a gym at the time, and I walk in there, and I was like, oh, boy, you know, but after the first workout, I was pretty hooked just because of Mike in LA.
Yeah.
Really, because their demeanor and their approach to fitness and their warmness and their welcoming attitude.
Yeah.
It hooks you right away.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, LA's accomplished a lot of other things in addition to being a gym owner, but I think their gym. I've not been there from the start. Obviously, I came long later, but when we have gone out to Denver and we've had the chance to go to their gym, you know, they always just say, like, come in and work out while you're here. They just have this wonderfully welcoming, open door feeling and vibe. And a lot of gyms, I've looked for gyms here and elsewhere, and it's just not like that. You don't walk in feeling welcome. You feel intimidated and you feel, like, shunned because you don't fit the normal type of the person that's working there. But I mean, I did a HIIT workout with some of their other members, and then LA did a little bit of training with me, and I don't have any fighting training. So, I mean, but it was fun. It was actually really, really fun. That just, the spirit they bring to that place is amazing, but they're incredibly professional and so, so good at what they do.
Yeah, I mean, they're a fight gym. They have fighters that compete. I don't know if they have any pros yet, but they have a bunch of good, really good amateurs, both Muay Thai and MMA.
Yeah.
And I know they've done personal training for the semi-pro rugby team that's there in Denver. They're as legit as it comes. And another aspect is the Kali and the Filipino fighting combat system that Mike teaches there.
Oh,
and that's a whole different thing. We'll probably get on in another topic.
You have to do an interview with him.
Yes.
To get more on that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I told LA in the interview is when I decided to move back to Florida, the only thing that was sad about leaving Denver was leaving them, you know, because that's what I said. It was you said it right. It's just such a welcoming atmosphere that they were my friends and family out there.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I've had that at a couple MMA gyms. I've been lucky enough to go to a couple different ones now. And that the aspect of martial arts and just combat sports in general, it breeds togetherness.
Yeah.
It's, you have to be, even though you're punching each other in the face or, you know, choking each other out.
Yeah.
You trust that person to obviously not physically harm you.
Right.
There's no intent. Right. You know, they're training as hard, just as hard as you, because whatever, they have a competition, or just because they know that's what you're supposed to do there. But it breeds an aspect of camaraderie.
Yeah.
And Mike in LA, I try to model ETT. I know I still have a long way to go, but that's kind of the model I use for the togetherness, the community aspect of what ETT is trying to accomplish, you know.
Yeah.
In the long run. Mm. But and LA, I said, hopefully she'll come. I think she'll come back for another interview on a later date, because she's so full of knowledge. We just touched on women's MMA and her book, of course, and then kind of more of a general aspect of what kind of the demeanor of MMA gyms, how it's progressing from being a men's or a male-centric kind of place into more inviting for everyone. But we can just touch on so many different topics. I know she kind of alluded to at the end of the interview, having Mike and LA on, both of them, her and her husband, to talk about couples training.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it'd be a good one to get on there too, how to, you know, keep a relationship strong by, you know, training each other, especially with combat arts, you know.
Yeah.
You get to punch and kick each other or grapple each other, things like that, you know. It brings each other close, and you get more respect, and you get to work out any anger between two, but, you know, it's just stress in general. You get to work it out.
Yeah, yeah.
She's great, a source of information, especially about women's fighting sports. That's a topic that people think is just some sort of new subject that just appeared out of thin air. You know, once Ronda Rousey became into the normal kind of news rotation, but it's been around forever, as LA told us.
Yep.
And this interview process, or the interview kind of aspect of the ETT Rap Show, I think I'd like to keep doing that. Probably not on a weekly basis, because we got topics we want to talk about on a weekly basis. But every once in a while, get some people that we would like to interview.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fresh perspective, and I think, you know, the points that are discussed, some of the things that LA brought up, I mean, they're huge issues. The fact of women in fighting and how just like the UFC has been changing, and that, you know, fighting women, that's not a new thing, but yet for most of the world, they're just now seeing competitive female fighters. And I think the stereotypes of the female fighters are very much still being broken through. Because a lot of people still have the idea, they have a certain image of a woman if she's going to be a fighter. And then they have a lot of kind of preconceived notions about what that woman can do as a fighter and the things that she can't do. And it's been proven again and again that that's just a load of crap.
Yeah.
But some of the people I know that you guys talked about especially are some of the individuals kind of pushing through and setting new standards and showing the reality of the situation, that I think it will make it a lot more appealing, you know, as it continues to grow. Women in general will take note of it and be more interested in following just these remarkable fighters, men and women. So
yeah, I agree. I said, you know, now nowadays more than ever, you know, women are coming in and seeing that they're capable of doing it. And that's the great thing about MMA in general, both male and female. We're going to be seeing lifelong martial artists or MMA fighters. You know, when it first started, when the sport first started, it was somebody that was either from, you know, a karate background, a jiu-jitsu background, or a wrestler going into MMA. Now they're going to be starting at 5 years old in MMA, and going to be progressing, and now so the sport will evolve and get much more, you know, exciting, and the product itself is going to only get better, both for males and females.
Yeah.
And hopefully our product's going to get better. That's what we're hoping.
Yeah.
That's why we keep doing this. And we would love any feedback you all have, even on possible future interviews. Luckily, through the power of Skype, we can talk to anyone. Which, anybody that's willing, of course.
Thank goodness for technology.
Yes. So, we, if you guys like the podcast, please let us know. If you have any ideas for future episodes, any people who would be good to interview. I know we talked about influential people earlier in the podcast. Let us know. And please share it with a friend. Anything we can do to get better, we're all up for it. And we are willing to do it. You got anything else for this week?
I think that's it, man.
All right, this has been another ETT Rap Show. We'll check you next time.
Peace.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks.